So great to have this snowy day. What a perfect day to gather together by Zoom. None of us has to worry about the roads. It's the kindness of the weather bringing us all together. So I'd like to speak today about kindness. You know, it strikes me that kindness is like one of these snowflakes that is falling from the sky. It's very fragile, and it appears when the conditions are right, but it's also easily melted away. And it's melted away by the heat of our afflictive emotions. You know, those emotions that afflict us with suffering, fear and greed, jealousy, anger. They can really come in and take our kindness away, melt it from us. But rather than talking about kindness, because really, how can I follow Naomi's beautiful poem? I thought today that I would let kindness speak for itself. So what I want to do is I want us to give us all a chance to feel kindness in our hearts and in our bodies so that we know it intimately. And to do that, I'm going to offer stories of kindness. And so please allow these stories to just wash over you. Let them flow in as they will. And notice how your body feels when something in particular touches you. Notice what that feels like, what your experience of kindness is in your own body. And then remember that feeling, because that is a great wealth that we can take out into the world, to know the feeling in our body of kindness. So I looked around on the internet and I found a bunch of stories about kindness. So these things are all publicly available. They're not my personal stories, but they're stories that I sort of harvested off the tree of the internet for us. So here's the first one from Jamie in Idaho. While going through a divorce, my mother fretted over her new worries. No income, the same bills, no way to afford groceries. It was around this time that she started finding boxes of food outside our door every morning. This went on for months until she was able to land a job. We never did find out who it was who left the groceries for us, but they truly saved our lives. So what is kindness? What I'd like to suggest is that kindness is a lens through which we see and interact with the world. Maybe some of you are here, I know some of you are here, last time when we talked about washes. Remember that? We talked about these color washes and how they affect how we interact with the world. But well, this is kind of like that. It's sort of like a colored lens, this kindness. So the kindness lens is warm and it's tender, it's forgiving. Imagine looking through that lens at your life and at the world. Wouldn't that be lovely? Kindness helps both the giver and the receiver. Both are warmed and tenderized and forgiven. So here's a story about kindness showing up in an unexpected place. And I think this one really struck me because it's easy for me to believe that kindness should look like this and not like that. So here's an interesting story. Dude in a truck honked at me at an intersection while I was waiting for an older woman to cross the street. I gave him the finger. He honked again. I repeated the gesture. He proceeded to follow me to a parking lot and block my car. I got out, ready to throw punches. He got out. Huge man. I'm dead. He put out his hand, to shake. He explained that he'd honked, but then noticed his error when he saw the woman. So he honked again to say sorry. He followed me to personally apologize so he wouldn't ruin my day. We shook hands. Changed me forever. That's from Paul. You know, kindness is happening in all groups of people, even the people we think are bereft of kindness. Even in this culture of these two men who were ready to go at it with fists, there's kindness there too. Kindness arises when conditions are right. There's many conditions under which kindness can arise, but one of them is abundance. When we see that we are whole, when we have enough, it's easy for us to be kind. Now here's a story from Sheila. Children were playing at the recreation area of an IKEA store when my 5-year-old granddaughter motioned for a small boy to stop. She knelt down before him and retied his flopping shoelaces. She had only just learned to tie her own. No words were spoken, but after she finished, both smiled shyly, then turned and raced off in different directions. So this little girl had an abundance. She had plenty. She knew how to tie shoes. And her kindness flowed right out of that fullness of herself. And she was kind because being kind feels wonderful. She knew how great it felt to be able to tie her shoes. And so she saw somebody who needed their shoes tied. And she says, yeah, I want to tie your shoes too. But kindness can also arise from our difficulties. And this is what Naomi's poem was about kindness arising from our own suffering. You know, it's hard to be kind sometimes when we suffer. When we're oppressed, when we're discriminated against, when we're in poverty, it makes it difficult. It makes it particularly difficult because we often blame others for those difficulties, and so our heart shrinks, and we don't know where our kindness has gone. Yet, as the poem told us, our difficulties also open our hearts to others. As a chaplain, I always think about this phrase, the wounded healer, by Henri Nouwen wrote a book that way, of that title. And his point is that we can only authentically serve other people from our own wounds, from our own suffering, because then we know how to join with them. We don't look down on them with pity. We join with them. You know, we don't want others to suffer like we've suffered. And interestingly, there's a lot of studies on this, and what studies are showing is that poor people give a higher percentage of their income than wealthy people. So there's something going on here, you know, a kindness existing between people who have very little and who have suffered a lot. So here's another story from Stacy. I saw a dress in a consignment shop that I knew my granddaughter would love, but money was tight. So I asked the store owner if she could hold it for me. May I buy the dress for you? Asked another customer. Oh, thank you, but I can't accept such a gracious gift. Then she told me why it was so important for her to help me. She'd been homeless for 3 years, she said, and had it not been for the kindness of strangers, she would not have been able to survive. I'm no longer homeless, and my situation has improved, she said. I promised myself that I would repay the kindness so many had shown me. She paid for the dress, and the only payment she would accept in return was a hug. I bet that shopper that bought that dress felt really great to be able to be kind like that. Here's another story. I used to manage an LGBT bookstore. One night, a caller says he thinks he might be gay and is considering self-harm. We were not a crisis center. But as long as we were talking, he's safe, right? So I talk to this guy, and I answer questions, and I try to be encouraging. And I'm maybe sounding a little bit frantic, and I'm definitely ignoring the customers in the store. Suddenly, this angel of a woman puts her hand on my shoulder and asks for the phone. My turn, she says. And she, this 50-something lesbian, talks to this stranger on the phone. And a line forms behind her. Every customer in that store knows that call, knows that feeling, and every person takes a turn at talking to that man. That story comforts me so much to this day. Wow. So that's kindness that arises from our own suffering. What a beautiful flower to grow out of the mud of our suffering. How do we cultivate kindness? So kindness is not a feeling. It's an ability. Kindness is not a feeling. It's an ability. The more we practice kindness, the kinder we become. The kinder we become, the happier we become. So kind feelings follow kind action, not the other way around. We don't have to wait until we feel kind to do a kind act. That's kind of nice to know, because sometimes I don't feel so kind, right? And I can still be kind even when I don't feel kind, and trust that the kind feeling will follow. So about how to cultivate this kindness, I want to talk about four different facets of what kindness is. And any one of these four facets is enough. But the more of these facets that we cultivate in ourselves, the easier it is for us to enjoy being kind in the world. So the first facet is compassion. It's seeing a need and taking action. Seeing the need and taking action. So here's a story from Patricia. I was balancing caring for a toddler and working a full-time job, all while my Navy husband was on extended duty overseas. One evening, the doorbell rang. It was my neighbor, a retired chief petty officer, holding a breadboard loaded with a freshly cooked chicken and vegetable stew. "I've noticed you're getting a little skinny," he said. It was the best meal I'd had in months. So I imagine this man, this chief petty officer, knew what it was like for families to be separated. And he took action. That's compassion. So compassion is the active part of kindness. We see a need and we act. It's spontaneous. It arises from us freely, like a bird singing. You know, the bird just starts singing. And that's what compassion is like. When we see the need spontaneously, wow, the action just comes out of us. We don't have to calculate it or make some cost-benefit analysis or something like that. We see, we act, we just let go. So what I'd like to do is take a little pause here and invite each of us to close our eyes and recall a time when you acted spontaneously to help another person. So take a moment to recall. And if you can recall that event, can you get in touch with what it felt like in your body to offer that spontaneous, compassionate kindness? Notice that feeling. Water that seed. It's something trustworthy, that feeling in our body. It says, yes, this is the right thing to do. Okay, thank you for that. So let's go to the next facet of kindness, which is sympathetic joy. That's finding joy in the joy of others. Now, someone might correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I can find no word in English for finding joy in other people's joy. I don't know. I don't know that there's a word. You know, we know there's this German word, right? Schadenfreude, taking joy in other person's misfortune. Well, that's kind of come in. I mean, I think we know that pretty well. But I think we only have words for what we really experience. And there's something in our culture that doesn't necessarily foster us finding joy in other people's joy. But when you think about it, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to do, to find joy in other people's joy. Here's a story about that from Maryland. I forgot about the rules on liquids in carry-on luggage. So when I hit security at the airport, I had to give up all my painting supplies. When I returned a week later, an attendant was at the baggage area with my paints. Not only had he kept them for me, but he'd looked up my return date and time in order to meet me. Wow. So that attendant went way out of their way to take joy in Marilyn's joy of getting back her paints. So let's do this again. Let's recall a time when we took joy in another person's joy. How does that feel in your body? Luckily, we have lots of opportunity to practice this because every week people share their joys, right? So maybe we can intentionally water this seed of finding joy in other people's joy and see if that can grow. See if that seed can grow even more as we go along. You know, it's actually opening a door when we can find this sympathetic joy to much greater happiness and acts of kindness. Because if all we can take is joy in our own joy, well, there's not very much of that, right? Each one of us is just small and has a bounded life. But if we can take joy in other people's joy, we have an almost infinite source of joy in the world. We can move through the world watching for people who are joyful and taking joy in their joy. It just exponentially increases our possibilities of being happy. Well, this might be a great seed to water. All right, the third facet is equanimity. Third facet of kindness is equanimity. And in this case, I'd like to define that as lending your own calmness to another. Lending your own calmness to another. So here's a story about that. I was in the middle of a silent panic attack while waiting on a flight. Another passenger's assistant dog evidently noticed my condition and pulled its person to come to me. The dog put its head on my lap for 20 minutes until I felt better. Wow. So this one touches me particularly because my daughter has a service dog like this, a dog who's trained to notice things like anxiety, panic attacks, and wow, what a gift. The dogs can teach us about kindness. And particularly this quality of equanimity, of loaning someone else our calmness. So if we're to loan someone else our calmness, we have to have calmness, right? We can't loan them our calmness if we don't feel calm. So our own happiness is vital. It's not just vital because it's nice that we're happy, but the world needs our happiness so that we can share it with people who don't find their own happiness. Our own happiness becomes a treasure. But it's only a treasure if we know how to share it with other people through kindness. If it's just our own happiness, we might have greed. But when we learn this art of equanimity, of sharing our calmness with another, then our happiness becomes a great gift for the whole world. In my Zen tradition, at the end of every gathering, we do a chant like this. We chant this, we say, "May the merit of this practice benefit all beings and bring peace." Whatever we may have gained in this meditation or this gathering, we immediately share with the whole world. Try not to hold it back at all. So that's the third facet of kindness, equanimity. The last facet of kindness that I want to mention is generosity. And I think of generosity as loosening my grip, opening my hand. Here's a story about that. I was grocery shopping with my three-year-old, and he really wanted some gummy bears. I explained to my son that we couldn't afford it because Daddy had lost his job. A man came up and said, "Oh, you dropped this," and handed me a $50 bill. So recall for a moment your last generous act. Call that to mind. As you hold that in your mind, who received more from your generous act? You or them? Hard question to answer, isn't it? Generosity loosens our selfishness and expands our hearts. My gripped hand does not make me happy. When I loosen it, my heart is free again. My generosity can flow. The more we give, the more our heart swells to embrace the whole world. The more we give, the more we have to give. I can't give very much at all from a clenched fist, but when I open my hand, there's lots that flows out. I give and I have more to give. And the more we give, the happier we become. I find this really lovely. I find this really lovely news because we are trained by our culture that get more for yourself, you'll be happier. But I think all of our real experience shows us that when we are generous, we are actually happier. When we offer things with kindness, when we offer a kind word, we're happier than when we demand that others treat us a certain way or that we get this new thing or this amount of money. So just to review, there are four facets of kindness that I just touched on. Compassion, which is seeing a need and taking action. There's sympathetic joy, that wordless thing in English about finding joy in the joy of others. We should come up with a word. The third facet is equanimity. Lending your own calmness, your own happiness for others. And finally, generosity, loosening your grip. Kindness, as we practice it more and more, we discover that it is the undercurrent of all things. What do I mean by that? Kindness is the undercurrent of all things. Kindness is what naturally arises when its impediments are removed. It's just there. It just bubbles up when we take away its impediments. So when we feel peaceful and at ease, kindness is there. When we know our own abundance, kindness is there. When we know our own suffering, kindness is there. When we drop the illusion that I have to have, give me, give me, give me, kindness is there. We don't have to do anything else. It's the undercurrent. It's the fabric of the universe. I particularly love the genius of the way Christianity tells the story of our unimaginably vast unity as a love story. So the Christians talk about a relationship with a loving God. This God embraces you and sees you, nurtures you, no matter what. And our idea of God in the Christian way of thinking of God is exactly the four facets of kindness. God hears our prayers and responds. This is compassion. God takes joy in our joy. This is sympathetic joy. God embodies this equanimity of calmness. No matter what we do, God's there. That's equanimity. And God provides everything we need. That's generosity. So God, as Christians imagine God, is kindness itself. And this occurs in other religious traditions as well. Ram Dass, who followed a Hindu path, ultimately came to describe himself as kind awareness. That's who he was. At the end of his path, he came to the realization he is kind awareness. And for Buddhists, we talk about it being our Buddha nature. That's just what flows out, that kindness flows out. So it's not one particular religion that has all the wisdom here. It's just humans finding a voice for this essential kindness that's in all of us. Well, I want to end by reading a poem by Rick Terwilliger, and I think he really beautifully sums this up. Take care of your neighbor. Do it quietly, without their knowledge, without seeking praise. Do it in such a way that they're unaware of your efforts. This is the hidden gate, the one you've been looking for. I'll read that one more time. Take care of your neighbor. Do it quietly, without their knowledge, without seeking praise. Do it in such a way that they are unaware of your efforts. This is the hidden gate, the one you've been looking for.